Welcome to the iCoder Podcast with Ian McDuff.
Hello, once again, podcast and ODR audience, and welcome to another in the series of the iCoder Podcasts. I'm Ian McDuff, your host, and as usual, I speak with you from Wellington in Aotearoa, New Zealand. In this conversation, I'm delighted to be joined by my good friend and colleague in the ODR field, Mireille Philippe. Mireille is a French lawyer of French and Lebanese origin and is a dispute resolution practitioner and was a special counsel at the Secretariat of the ICC, International Court of Arbitration, until her retirement at the end of 2022. Mireille has been in the field of online dispute resolution since 2000 and, as I recall from the 2017 forum, one of the pioneers. It was a lovely touch in that forum. And you've built a number of platforms for the ICC and for arbitral women together with IT engineers. Mireille was also a member of the UNCTAD Working Group, Working Group 3 on ODR. She's a fellow of the National Center for Technology and Dispute Resolution and a board member of the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution and an advisory board member of the ODR Africa Network. Mireille is co-founder of Arbitral Women, which is an organization gathering and promoting female practitioners in international dispute resolution. She's a member of a number of organizations promoting gender equality and equal opportunities for equal qualifications. She received the CPR 2018 Diversity Award, belated congratulations, for outstanding contribution to diversity in ADR. Mireille has published articles on arbitration, online dispute resolution, and gender diversity. Mireille, welcome to the iCoder podcast series, and thank you for taking the time to do so. It's great to see you again.
Thank you for the invitation, Jan. It's a great pleasure. And I heard some of the podcasts you had recorded. They are absolutely amazing. You learn a lot. You think you know everything, but you don't.
One of the reasons I'm loving this series is every time I'm learning something, it sends me off in another direction to, you know, look up links or to find out new stuff. So it's a very rich resource of our iCoder and NCTDR colleagues out there. But Maurice, you indicated in earlier conversations and communications, one of the concerns that you have with ODR is that it's lagging behind. And I wonder if we'd start with your observations on that. Lagging behind ADR or lagging behind other processes? What do you have in mind?
Thank you, Jan. It's the question that actually I have wanted to speak to, because I think that today in 2023, when every single service is available online except justice per se, and justice, enough justice, I would say, and I will speak to that too, I find it saddening, because today everything is possible online. Flights, bookings, purchases, administration, everything is available. Why is justice not available online? I actually realized the fact of justice lagging behind back in 2016, when our friend from the Netherlands organized the 2016 forum in The Hague. And the main topic of that forum, of our ODR forum, was access to justice. And I realized even more that we are lagging behind, because it is unrealistic today to be unable to offer access to justice to any human being online when we have succeeded everything else online. When you think about traffic, air traffic, and you think about everything going on online and being directed online and being organized online, and everything works perfectly like an orchestra, how can we explain to young generations that we have succeeded everything except bringing justice online? We know, Jan, today, being part of iCoder and a fellow also of NCTDR, that many projects have been built Many were successful, but also a huge number of projects were interrupted for the reasons I will speak to too. How can we also justify that these projects were interrupted for objective reasons or for logical reasons and say to the world, you have to go to court, to a court building, instead of dealing with some of the conflicts online? First. Second, how can you explain to the world who can buy, to any human being actually being able to buy a sandwich online, booking a flight online, asking or applying for a passport online? How can you tell the humanity actually that you can do all this, but you cannot go to court online? You have to go to a court building. And it's Richard Susskind who said, you may remember that actually, is justice a space or is it a service? So actually, do we need to go to a court building or do we need to get a settlement? What is the purpose of giving access to justice? So the fact of not being able to offer justice online today is extremely concerning for many people, especially also for people involved in ODR. We've been involved in ODR for the last 2 or 3 decades, and for Colin Rule, our friend in Eat and Catch, for probably the last 4 decades, or even more than 30 years, but in any case, for over 2 decades. It is really concerning. Colin built the settlement system of conflicts on eBay and PayPal, and they settle millions of disputes every day. Why can't we do the same for other types of services? We know from our friends also from the Youth Accord, Judge, I forgot his name. Anyway, from the Youth Accord, that actually he prefers to have divorce cases settled online because it takes less time, not only for him as a judge, but also for the mothers or fathers having to spend their day in court instead of dealing this from home while being able to keep their children. And this applies also to many types of disputes. We know that civil, commercial, and even criminal disputes can be settled online, such as fraud, gambling, and so on. Malaysia courts have built a platform to settle these types of disputes online. So we know this is possible. Now, what has stopped everybody to expand those services? Many projects, I was saying, that have been interrupted, being projects built online for the courts or for private services, such as those offered by online dispute resolution providers. Now, let me perhaps speak about the fact of, let me rather mention all the problems that I consider personally have stopped us from moving online the justice services. First, I think that you need to believe in a project. If you don't believe in it, you can't take it forward. And that's actually a motto that you can take, a guiding principle that you can take in every single project in a life. You believe in a project, you can take it forward. And you have to also project yourself in the future. What do I want to achieve? Who is it useful for? And how can we benefit out of it? Once you have this general idea, then you can start thinking about, now, how do I build that business plan in order to make that project achievable? The problem is that the first problem I consider is exactly what I mentioned. You have to believe in something. And I think, unfortunately, that the first pitfall or the first failure was the fact that neither governments, nor courts, nor businesses, consumer agencies, schools have believed in building online platforms to give access to justice. Giving access to justice can be for consumers, very small consumer disputes, for civil disputes, for neighborhood disputes, this is civil disputes also, commercial disputes. They can be very small disputes and larger disputes for small enterprises or bigger enterprises, depending on the type of disputes. But everything is possible when you think that today billions of disputes are out there in the world, and probably 2/3 of them will never go to court because people cannot afford going to court or cannot afford hiring a lawyer for their disputes. It is saddening and does not build in a proper way either business or life, because you get discouraged of the fact that you're not finding the proper support for solving a small or a more important dispute. So first, there has been no support whatsoever by governments, by companies, by funders. Funders are actually one of the problems also, because they look into revenue, generating revenue in the short term, while building online platforms require to look into short, medium, and long-term projects. You cannot expect from a platform, a service on a platform, to build, to generate revenue in the short run. You have to think about the future, because in that period of time, you need to teach people, you need to educate them. This service is available online, and it's not science fiction. It is real. And it can give you, it can offer you the service that a court offers you in a building the same way, except that you gain time and you can afford it financial wise, because you don't have to hire a lawyer. You don't have to waste your time and maybe taking some days off from your job to be able to go to court. It is possible. Everything is about guiding the people to a service, educating them. So dissemination of information is a part of the problem. We built platforms, we built projects, but there has not been enough promotion about the projects. There has not been enough education about the service available online. And the lack of this promotion is quite important, because it's a second item, actually, a second element of the failure that I consider having kept justice lagging behind. First, the support, and then the dissemination and the education of the users. This is possible, educating. You can educate not only in universities, because universities, obviously, young generation will come out to the world having been open to the type of services that older generations have offered them or are enabling them to build. But it's more for people of not only our age, but even younger, for people who have not learned to use courts online. So educating them by promotion campaigns on the television, promotion campaigns in consumer agencies, promotion campaigns in every public forum that they can access to, in order to show them that it works. But this is also not enough. The third element is to give feedback and give statistics. The way I think the British Columbia court now does, it's absolutely amazing. They're almost the only one that I found in my recent survey that give detailed reports about the few months or annual activities.
Right.
So the reports are important because you tell the population, you tell the world, we had so many disputes. The dispute was about purchase of a service, of a good online, or about a neighborhood dispute, a divorce, a family dispute, and so on. This is the way the disputes were settled. It says how many disputes we have settled. We have received 100 cases. We have settled 60. 30 of them were settled on an amicable basis. 30 others were settled by giving the disputants a decision, or helping them to get to a decision. And this is how much it has costed. This is how we can go. When you learn from those reports that neighborhood disputes were successfully settled, family disputes were successfully settled, that it required only a few days or 2 weeks or a month to be settled, that it has cost only £100 or $100, whatever, to settle it, because it's simply a registration online and some services may be paid. Maybe it's less than that, maybe it's more than that, but if you give pragmatic information, if you give information in order to assess what it brings me as a user and how can I benefit from it. Yes, it doesn't cost much. Yes, it's available online and I can settle a dispute within a few days or a few weeks. Yes, it's offered to me and to anyone else and not only to people who know how to use the service. So it's available to any lay person. Then I can try potentially to start using this service. If I see that it works, I can take any other dispute that I may encounter in my private life online. So support, second, promotion, third, reporting. When you have statistics, when you have feedback also about how the dispute was settled, like for instance, the neighbors have agreed that perhaps it would be better to cut the tree instead of overlapping on the neighbor property. And they decided that they would split the cost of cutting down the tree. You can see in an objective way how the dispute was settled. This is extremely important. The other element, which is also one of the major problems, is that building a platform is not like building a house. When you build a house, you deliver it and you can live within it. Whereas building a platform is almost, and I always use this image, like bringing up a child. Because the child needs care every year. It needs new clothes. Excuse me. It needs school training, it needs sport trainings, it needs everything that changes from a year to another. And you have to adapt, and you have to upgrade, and you have to be inventive. It's exactly the same with a platform. You need to think better, more, farther. So when you build a platform and you deliver it and you think that's it, I have invested $100,000, it's wrong. It's a very bad business plan. And that has been the problem of many platforms, either that I have worked on or other people worked on, but everyone did the same mistake. I can tell you, big organizations, companies, small services, everyone made this mistake. Even at the European level, they had two very successful projects around 2000. They stopped both of them, and I saw that it was a big mistake. One of them was a project on which our friend Brian Hutchinson worked on. Ecoder, what was it? But it was working. And the second one was EJJNet. And again, it was working. Two services offered by Europe. But then they stopped them. Instead of improving the system or upgrading it or having feedback from the users to see how they see the service offered and how it can improve. So there are two aspects to this problem. First, the funders or the firms investing in a project think about short term. They deliver and that's it. This is an extremely bad business plan. Funders also want revenue generating, so they stopped funding. And this happened in two recent projects that I really regret a lot. And we will speak about them on our monthly meetings online. Two platforms which were built, they were successful, but unfortunately the funders stopped funding after 2 years because there were no clients so far either buying the platform, so the system, or using the online arbitration platform. It was an arbitration platform. So I said, don't do that. Try to find other people with whom we can cooperate in order to bring this further online instead of stopping yet other projects. But it didn't work, but they're now happy that I can take this forward with our friends in NCTDR and iCoder to speak about what they built and see who may be interested to purchase the system that they had built and which I found successful. I've helped them a bit in verifying the pages they had built, in giving them some advice of using my experience as to how it may be modified or improved. And it was working, but unfortunately the funders stopped funding and both projects are now on hold, have been on hold for the last 2 years. So this is one aspect of the problem. The funders don't continue funding or the firms stop funding and they throw to the garbage an entire project, time invested, energy invested, money invested. How can a logical business plan work? I mean, any business plan work if you don't look on the long term or even the short term, the medium term, but not the short term. Short term is not enough. So you invest a lot of time, you invest a lot of energy, you invest a lot of knowledge because you need to bring people to the table in order to use their experience and to learn from their expertise also. And you lose all that. This is a huge mistake.
Just a question to clarify your comments, because this is very rich stuff. There's so much going on here. I have an image of two different kinds of platforms or services that you have in mind. One is the one which is more oriented towards private settlement and is dependent, possibly overly dependent, on funders and persuading people to come to use the service. The other is the online services provided by the state. And this is, for example, the stuff that Richard Susskind is doing, where in the UK government is spending billions of pounds and taking His Majesty's courts online. The kind of projects I think you've been discussing are more of the first kind, the privately funded private platforms, possibly more oriented towards settlement. So in a way, it's a parallel to ADR. Is your thinking the same with the more state-directed, state-funded, basically the court systems, which are now moving into a digital framework? Is your thinking the same? Because those are not dependent on private funding.
It is the same, and I'll tell you why. Because unfortunately, many state projects started and were stopped. But the problem here is different. It's not only funding. It's about the agenda of the new government having taken charge, having been in place. They usually, whatever project that has been started by the government, which is replaced, the new government is not happy with the agenda of the previous government and simply stop the project. And that happened several times in France, for instance. So two platforms actually in the recent 3 to 4 years, 5 years maximum, started and they were simply not taken forward because it wasn't on the agenda of the people who succeeded. This is very saddening because when you think about the fact that such online court was to settle disputes up to 5,000 euros, I think. So it was only money claims, like in the UK. But they stopped it. Why have they stopped it? What has been done in order to assess how best to take it forward? How do we need it, especially during the lockdown, where many cases stopped and we're just staled because of nobody going to court and nobody being able to take the case forward? So yes, unfortunately, the answer is yes, because not only private projects, but also state projects have gone through the same mistakes And this is the reason for which we are lagging behind. If I take, for instance, only Europe, in Europe, there are only 2 to 3 countries which are now successful in offering justice online. Lithuania and Estonia. And it was, I was amazed by this example. And our friend Graham Ross knows about it because he's been to Lithuania the first time also with me, but also afterwards. And he continued cooperating with the people who invited us. The advantage they have is that when they built their justice, it was quite recent. So it's not a very old system like in France or in other countries. When they took their independence, they had to build their justice. And they thought about, considering that it was quite new, they thought about giving access to justice online. So in Lithuania and Estonia, you can file a case, any person can file a case online on state courts, on state courts platforms by simply using the ID number. So I'm Yehaz Philippe, I have an ID number of X, I go online, insert my ID number and file a claim online. And so it's successful and they are developing it more and more. In Norway, they have also a system not the same as in Lithuania and Estonia. So they are the only countries where I'm aware of successful projects. Neither Italy nor France, Belgium, or any other country is really successful in bringing justice online. The Queen's, now the King's project of bringing the court online is an example. I hope other countries will take inspiration from it. But that project has started about 4-5 years ago. Yeah. So they are still building it. It's not yet over. So this means that by the time online justice is delivered, not only for money claims up to £5,000, but also other types of claims, it's going to take another few years. And this means that we will be in 2030 or even 2035 until justice is really brought online. How much time this is going to require from other countries which have not started projects like the UK? So the concern is continuing, and my concern is in not giving access to justice online, it's shared by many, because we see objectively that this is not yet possible. And this is saddening when we know that it works. It is not science fiction. People believe that it's science fiction. This is unfortunately due also to the pitfalls. They think it's science fiction simply because many projects stopped or platforms interrupted. I just handed down an article together with Morenike Obifarende, our friend also from my coder and board member. We just handed down an article, which will be published by Kluwer, about the current services available to people. I was very saddened to see, following the survey I did, that many platforms disappeared, which are listed for the time being on the NCTBR providers list. So I shared the list with Colin to tell him that we need to remove them. So at least 20 of them have disappeared, or the platform is completely dead, no access, not available, whatever, without any information. Only one has indicated that we have stopped our services, simply stopped our services, without indicating whether they are continuing in a different forum, in a different way. So many have stopped, and very, very, very few offer services. There are different from family services. There are many, many, if we can say, compared to other services which are missing online, many family providers, so ODR providers for family disputes. Extremely few for consumer disputes, extremely few, and almost none for neighborhood disputes, other than those offered on courts platforms. The one which is successful and from which we can take inspiration is, again, the British Columbia court with our friend who built also that platform. And the Utah courts, some of state courts in the US, not all of them, and not for all types of disputes. So it's extremely few when you think, so I mean, from the survey that I made, there are extremely few services. Another friend of ours, Annie Schmitz, have also published an article about the services available online in the US. You can also see that there are very few when you think about the number of courts in each state and the number of courts in the United States. It's extremely minimal. Same with the rest of the world. Nothing exists in the Middle East except the ADGM. They started with it's not even an online service. It's virtual meetings, not an ODR really service. And here I open a parenthesis to speak about ODR. As you know, Jan, during the COVID, during the lockdown, many people started holding hearings online, virtual hearings. And so everyone became an expert in ODR. But this is not ODR. This is only giving access to a forum while being prevented for many reasons from commuting together in a physical space. So it was only offering a way to continue work and to continue life by offering an online space to discuss, to plead, or to hear a case. But it's not solving disputes online. It's only a minimal part of the ODR that we can define as ODR. I know that even us experts, if we can call ourselves experts in ODR, do not agree on the definition of ODR. Many broaden it in terms of whatever we use online is ODR. I don't think it is. I prefer the definition that at one point Graham gave, that it actually, and I think also Eaton gave this, that actually when technology becomes part of the resolution of the problem, so the fourth party, that's where we can speak about ODR. So it's not only about hearing a case online, it's uploading documents online, having access to the financial aspect online, having access to more information and more services online when you are involved in a dispute and you need to solve it. I'll close this parenthesis here because I think we can speak about it for longer than that. And
that's one of the issues that's come up in most of these conversations, which is just the one you've raised about how we define ODR. And you're quite right. I mean, I think of a number of my mediation colleagues who during lockdown immediately became experts on Zoom. In a way, exactly. It is ODR, but it's ODR light, and it's
quite light. Yeah. Because you don't build anything. Actually, it's a Zoom platform or whatever platform is available to you, and you can take it. Yeah. You can use it.
And you're using.
I'll mention two other pitfalls. Sorry, Jan. Sure. May I mention two last pitfalls, major pitfalls, and probably there are others, and our friends from the ODR community can also share more than that, probably. I think that another problem has been the fact of being a bystander, instead of being an innovator. Many people are afraid of innovating, but firms, if you are a private person, you can potentially think, oh, am I going to be able to take this forward, financially speaking, and if I don't find enough support? But when you speak about governments, about state courts, about companies, you should not be a bystander. If nobody starts to innovate, we will get nowhere. So we have to find people who believe again in a project and take it forward. The other pitfall that I wanted to mention is obviously continuity. We mentioned that earlier. If we interrupt platforms, nobody will believe that this works. Everybody believes that it's science fiction, that we are projecting ourselves, but it's not taking place yet, which is wrong. And finally, a last one is investing enough time in the specification. You need to have internal knowledge and also external knowledge. Many companies made the mistake of hiring outside knowledge without including the people in the company who have the expertise of the job of the company in order to draft clear specifications, pragmatic specifications. You need to be pragmatic. You need to know, how am I using the service today? But what am I offering more in bringing that service online? What is it that I can offer that today I'm not able to offer? Immediate access to information, for instance, immediate access to the documents, being able to find until 24 hours before the deadline expires. Whereas if you are in the real life, you're compelled to go to the post office before it closes and file your memoranda. So there are many advantages that we can use. When I built the NetCase platform for the ICC, I can speak to that in just a few minutes. In terms of marketing, I'm very much marketing wise, and I always think about, how can I bring this to the public? How can I make a news out of it, something interesting out of it? So what I did is that during 5 years, twice a year, I would improve the system even slightly, but make a news out of it, make the buzz out of it, ask feedback. And if an arbitrator told me, I would like to have an automatic list of every single document posted online, indexed, starting with the year, month, and day. And I thought that was very clever. I did this improvement, and I made the buzz out of it. And every year, I would improve at least twice a year with something new. Searching also a document by any, even if it was filed in another language, as well as a full searchable system that we implemented, and it was working very well. So I would improve regularly, promote it regularly, and ask the feedback from the users and say, okay, let me think about it and see how we can improve this. So afterwards, I would go back to the people who gave the feedback to say, we have heard you, this is how we have improved the system. And so you have the users who see that first they have been heard, and second, that they are satisfied with the system, and you can have them continue using the service because they saw that there is something which is going on and which is satisfying my needs. So you have to think about the expectations of the users and to show them that they can trust you. I'll stop here because otherwise we can continue speaking for hours about this, how I see actually how we can improve the system. Not the system, sorry, but the product.
I've got a number of questions arising out of your comments, but I would also like to have a little time talking about your work in diversity. But just one question. I'm just wondering how you envisage the application of ODR in the way in which you've talked about it with, as Ethan and Graham and others have discussed it, the more active role of technology in those cases, those law cases which require cross-examination, witness examination, actually require more of the conventional or traditional judicial functions. I mean, what is easier to imagine is the settlement process. It's harder to imagine, at least for me, where there's a much more intensive court-based process. I mean, I think it's more the issue in the common law system, I think, than in the civil law system. But I think of how criminal law cases, or even the case that's been occupying the news in the New York Times in recent times, the case of the Dominion Computing Company against Fox, which is going to be a very public case. And it's, in a way, it requires the ceremonial, almost the ritual functions of a court. And is there a risk that we lose something of that ritualistic function. I don't want to sound like an apologist for the legal system here, because that locks us into the past. But I remember there's a book came out possibly 10 years ago on court buildings, on the architecture of democracy, and looking at how the courts were architecturally and symbolically central to the operation of democracy. Are we at risk of losing some of that if this all becomes digitized?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, because my answer would be, during the lockdown, many lawyers have experienced this lack of physical presence during the cross-examination for the hearings, and the fact of looking into in the eyes of the person speaking, in the eyes of the arbitrator, the judge, whatever. So the physical actual space was missed in some instances. And I think that in big cases, such as the one you just mentioned, the Dominion Fox, and other cases which are really huge and involving many actors, many stakeholders, it might be better to keep these sort of cases taking place in court buildings with the ceremonial, as you mentioned, and the way we have experienced it so far. I will distinguish this aspect, which requires probably to continue doing it the way we have been doing it. I will distinguish it from the million other types of disputes, small or medium disputes, which we can settle online. We need to be pragmatic. It cannot be 100% online or 100% offline. Some cases need to continue offline. Maybe filings can take place only online, but the actual hearing should take place in a court building. Whereas in small and medium cases where you don't require hearings, ceremonials, cross-examination can be settled online. And we know that this type of disputes are huge. They are by billions. I will try to find the number, because I did this survey, and if that interests the public, otherwise I will I'll refer to my article later. But it was a huge percentage, and the information is available online. Again, I'll try to find it while we're speaking. So it's completely different. When you settle these types of small disputes that take the time from the judges, instead of solving them online, it's a huge improvement for the entire world. You need to keep in mind also that, I can't find it now, but never mind. When you think about people who are disabled, who cannot access physically a court, right? Or who are very far away from a court buildings and who cannot afford traveling to a court. When you think about people who don't have the language skill that enable them to express themselves immediately in the presence of a lawyer or a judge, or feeling completely stressed and unable to utter a word, whereas when you're online, you're able potentially to access a dictionary, to use Google Translate, whatever, and to write your complaint and to be able to express what you expect as a settlement, it is completely different. And it doesn't cost, for instance, for small disputes, when you purchase a good and it's not what you expected, you can write what you purchased, that it is not compliant with the promotion of the product online, that you wish to be refunded, or that you wish that the product is replaced. It's easy, like eBay, like PayPal, like all these sort of millions of small cases which are settled. But even in neighborhood disputes, civil disputes, there are many things that you can take online. People feel less stressful. Think about the family disputes, a wife and a husband disputing, and there's a sort of a level of a violence or hatred. When the person is in presence of the husband or the wife and is feeling stressful, is not going to be able potentially to express him or herself. Whereas when you're online, you're not in the presence of the enemy, between quotation marks, you feel much more at ease. And potentially, you can even lower your expectation by saying, okay, I'll accept this. Let's find a consensus. You take this, I take that. And it becomes a little bit less stressful, as opposed to being in the presence of the person that you consider an enemy. So there are many things that can be done effectively and efficiently online that can take away from the courts all this thousand millions of small cases, which also unfortunately generate huge backlogs in the court. Instead of the court having to concentrate on important cases that cannot be settled as swiftly online, they can concentrate on more important cases and have small cases settled online. When you have a judge sitting in front of a screen and dealing, let's say, with 20 family disputes in a few hours, very quickly online, and then taking enough time to settle cases that they have to hear in the presence of the lawyers, the parties, and all the stakeholders in courts, that makes life much easier for the judges, for the disputants, for the lawyers. Lawyers are not losing business, because this is a comment that I heard very often in conferences. And I said every time, you're not losing business, because small disputes never come to your desk because people cannot afford it. So you're not losing business. Don't think that you're losing business. These cases never land on your desk. So we need, again, to educate people, to tell them that it's doable. We're speaking about two types of disputes. Very important disputes that can go to court buildings, and billions of small disputes that can be settled online and effectively. We know that Colin has built lots of platforms. We know that other friends of ours have built also platforms, and that they're working, but they're very few, extremely few. When you think about the billions of human beings around the world, it's very few platforms. There is not enough, and not enough for everyone.
I get the impression, I wasn't able to go to the ODR forum in India, but I get the impression that the number of platforms there and the use of ODR, one, India, Brazil, Argentina, has had a huge impact on reducing the backlog in cases to which you referred, which certainly makes access more efficient. And the example you're also using of family cases could be applied elsewhere if you're also using online tools to allow potential litigants to get their questions answered by a series of probably AI-assisted question and answers. So there's a number of strategies we can use to facilitate people moving through the system.
Absolutely. And our friend Elizabetsky Alberto Elizabetsky is a specialist in this, and he has really done so much in Latin America. This is another inspiration to take. So the good thing is that he's showing that it works. And as you mentioned, Brazil, and so let's hope that things can move quickly. If I had to make a wish, is probably that all of us ODR people who believe in ODR services online is really to go to governments and to speak about educating everyone. I wouldn't use the word educating because it may shock judges or governments, but rather let's cooperate in educating the population and in bringing information online so that people can understand that this is not science fiction. But you have to cooperate with us, because we need you. We need funds. We need the forum to promote. We need the forum to educate. And we really need to go there. And the reason for which I'm speaking about this cooperating with governments, and this is how I think it may work in the future, is because this is exactly what we did in arbitration. When I was at the ICC, I used also sometimes to travel, to speak, to promote not only arbitration, but also the NetCase platform that I built, to speak with lawyers, but also to speak with judges in order to explain to them that arbitration is not a competition. Arbitration is complementary to state court services, because the backlog is huge and because we're not taking away cases from them, and to explain the benefits of arbitration. and to tell them that we need them, and they need us probably, but we need them, we need to cooperate. So by reaching out to the main stakeholders, we may potentially improve the speed of getting justice online. So building projects and showing them that it works, building platforms and showing them that it works, is part of potentially and hopefully successful justice online, but also including them from the outset in the projects. This is what we can offer. This is what we need you to offer. Let's cooperate and help you, because we know you need the help, and we need also to give access to justice and satisfy users. So I will close the subject here, because as I said, we can continue forever.
That's the kind of perfect note to finish on. I know that there's more that you and I can talk, particularly in relation to your work on diversity. And what I'd like to suggest, if this is okay with you, is that in fact we come back in another conversation to discuss your work in diversity, because I don't want to restrict that to a hurried 5 minutes or so, because I think that's also desperately important. So perhaps we should finish on that note that you've just made, which is a utterly appropriate note about the need for cooperation between the number of agencies, between the funders, the providers, the courts, state, in terms of building the digital access to justice future that you have been outlining. So perhaps we might finish on that note, because I think, and would you be open to coming back for another conversation on your diversity work?
Yeah, and this is very kind. I would love to, because just for your information, we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of Arbiter Women on the 15th of May. So it would be absolutely topical to speak about what has been achieved in the last 30 years. And I'm very happy to speak to that at another occasion, because it would be sad just to finish in one or two sentences the work of 30 years and how diversity has improved.
No, it's much too important to reduce to that. It would be a disservice to the work that you and your colleagues have done. So I will get back to you by way of email to set up a time. But if we can just wrap this conversation with those closing comments of yours 3 or 4 minutes ago, which I think I'm not going to try and summarize, because you've given us a very rich overview of why it is, first of all, we're not doing as well as we could do, and the ways in which we could do it a whole lot better. So Mariz, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful to catch up with you again. Great to see you. I get the advantage of seeing you, the listeners will not, but thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Jan. It has been really very enjoyable to speak with you, and thank you for the invitation again.
Okay, well, enjoy the rest of your day, and I will end the recording. Take good care. Bye-bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by ICODER, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about ICODER or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.